Hopewell Gardens. Do all the things you wanted to do all summer, all day, all night. Winter, spring, summer, fall. Call 1-800-441-4410 for reservations at Pocono Gardens and beautiful Mount Airy Lodge.
Hello and welcome to another episode of FW Presents, the anthology show for the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and this is another installment of Mountain Comics, the show where I look back at the comic books I bought while on vacation in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania in the 1970s and 1980s. And joining me in the cabin this week is returning guest and fellow network all-star, Max Romero. Hi, Max.
What, me worry?
Exactly. As you might guess for everybody, if you've looked at the show notes or just from Max's intro there, we are talking about not a comic book specifically, but an issue of Mad Magazine, specifically Mad number 242, which is cover dated October 1983, which features an amazing cover combining Star Wars and the A-Team, because this issue has parodies of both things, and it's got Darth Vader lifting his helmet, revealed to be Mr. T underneath, and then you've got a very disturbing Ewok with the face of Alfred E. Newman. It's really kind of upsetting in a lot of ways. Now, just to let everybody know, we're not going to get into detailed analyses of all the individual features of this Mad Magazine, because a lot of these things are just, what's there really to talk about? I really wanted to have Max on to talk about Mad Magazine in general, because of course, just not that long ago, Mad Magazine was in the news in that it's going away, which made everybody very, very upset, understandably. But I was going to ask Max, I want to ask you, like, what's your history with Mad Magazine in general?
Well, first of all, let me say I'm very upset that Mad Magazine is going away.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm one of those people who has not bought Mad Magazine in a very long time.
Yeah,
so I am very much part of the problem. But I know that, like, maybe a year ago, I think, they got a new editor and wanted to go in a new direction. And I had actually started reading it again just because it had improved a lot over what it had been, what it had kind of slid into at some point. And it had kind of that old vibe it was more of what Mad Magazine used to be, I guess. Mm-hmm. But and which I really liked, because I've been reading Mad Magazine for since I was very, very young. Everyone's probably tired of hearing about my aunt who owned a bookstore, but my aunt owned a used bookstore, and mm-hmm. so I started getting into Mad Magazine was actually with the Digest.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, and because she would have a bunch of those, and you know, it's always, you know, Mad About the Movies and Mad About Summer and, you know, that sort of thing, or anthologies of a particular artist. And I just kind of devoured those. And from there, that led me into seeking out the magazine itself.
Yeah, it's sort of funny. I was doing some research for this issue, trying to find out when it was released, actually. And good Lord, man, if you just put in Mad in like comics.org, you are fall down the rabbit hole, because it lists every single paperback as a separate title. Wow. And I mean, so you're mm-hmm. off to the races with 20 pages of Mad does this and Mad does that. And you're just like, no, I just want to find a Mad magazine. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to find it. But yeah, I agree that I haven't read Mad Magazine a long time either. Part of it is that it's not available anywhere. Like, it's not for sale in any place that I go to. It wasn't even for sale in the comic book stores that I used to frequent. You had to special order it. And, you know, I mean, it's so easy to forget about something if you have to special order it. I mean, I guess you could put it on your pull list. So I admit, like you, I am part of the problem. I was deeply upset to find that it's going away, but I also haven't bought it either. And it's like, well, and I understand that magazines are kind of unfortunately a dying form, and mm-hmm. kids just don't ingest humor the way they used to, and a magazine just seems pathetically kind of old hat. That said, it's one of these things that it's just – I wish I want it to always be around. I feel like we need to have some on – I mean, first of all, it's just such a brand. I mean, the magazine is like, what, 57 years old at this point?
Right.
I mean, good Lord. It survived so many things. It's the last vestige of EC Comics, you know, mm-hmm. which is almost like having like a dinosaur still around. You know, there's one dinosaur that's still, you know. I mean, it's just – that's just amazing that the thing still exists. I mean, of course, it's been owned by DC for many years. But nevertheless, it's the last – original thing from EC Comics to still exist. And yeah, it's the kind of thing where I wish it was still around. And I will say that once in a blue moon where I had been in a 7-Eleven or like a Royal Farms or any of those sorts of like convenience store brands, once in a while I would see a Mad magazine. This was many years ago, and I would buy it because I just liked the novelty of, hey, I'm somewhere this is being registered that they sold a copy of Mad magazine. But that was a long, long time ago. And so I kind of can't believe that Mad is really going to go away. I feel like at some point DC or Warner's is going to figure some way out, some way to make this profitable. I mean, no, I mean, I think I even read that it's not really going away, and that it's going to be all in all reprint title because they have so many years to pull from. Right. But I mean, at some point, I have to feel like somebody's going to come along and say, "Look, we can find a way to get back on this," because it's one of the most durable brands in history. I mean, there's a TV show for Pete's sakes,
right? And I think I might be wrong about this, but isn't Alfred E. Newman one of like the most recognizable characters, or you know, in around the world?
Yeah, he's
like up there with the Superman shield, right? I mean, he's you know, people know, even if you don't know, you know, you've seen that face somewhere before.
Yeah, everyone knows that it sort of is a code for blissful ignorance, which right. we have a lot of nowadays. So I mean, we're living in Alfred E. Newman's time. So,
if we ever needed Mad Magazine, it is now.
Yes.
And I am not even kidding.
Yeah. No, it's true.
You know, we need the kind of satire that Mad used to bring. And rereading this, I was surprised how sharp-edged it is. I mean, obviously, a lot of this probably – I was 13 when this particular issue came out. And a lot of it probably just went right over my head. But rereading this particular issue now, I was like, wow, this is – kind of dark and kind of gritty. I was surprised.
There's definitely some stuff in here that I just nodded my head at. I was like, well, that's kind of timely, isn't it?
Right.
And, you know, this is a 35-year-old magazine. It is sort of funny in that I mentioned that I was looking up some research on this, and I tried to find out the on-sale date, and I could not find it because while it's cover dated October 1983, that was, I think, as far as I know, Mad Magazine, like comic books, were post-dated 3 months in advance for newsstand sale. So that means it probably would have gone on sale in July, but I couldn't find that information anywhere. Nobody seemed to actually have the on-sale dates for this thing. And the way I do Mountain Comics is every year – I mean, I do the show in season. As everybody knows, I only do about 6 or 7 per year. I make a list of the ones I want to cover, and then I put together the guests, and we move forward. And this wasn't even on my list. This wasn't even on like my first 3 or 4 passes because I had forgotten that I had it. And then a couple of months ago, let me back up a little. I have photos from our family album. I don't know how extensive your family albums get, Max, but we have relatively extensive photo albums of our days in the Poconos. In fact, they have their own separate family albums of these trips. And I really treasure the photos of me from that time where there are comic books somewhere in the picture. Because it was always so important to me, that photo that is my host photo on the website at firewaterpodcast.com is me holding the copy of Avengers 213. That's from the mountains. And at a certain point, I had gone through all our photo albums and found the photos of me with comic books. And I realized, well, that's it. Like, all the other memories I have of buying comic books from that time have to come from my brain because – these photos are all that exist. That's it. There will never be another photo. And that kind of made me a little melancholy that it's like, oh, this is it. These 17 photos are the sum total of the memories I have of the physical, you know, manifestations of the memories I have of buying comic books. Until my mother happened to be going through some envelope buried in the bottom of a box, and she found some photos of me, and she said, you might want to look through these. And there was a photo of me on the couch in our cabin, and laying in the front was a copy of this Mad magazine.
Oh, wow.
And below it was a Cracked magazine, down market version of Mad magazine.
Right.
And I was so excited because I'd never seen this photo. I had no memories of this photo. And I was like, wow, there it is, Mad magazine. And obviously, I must have bought it at the time, because I didn't bring comics with me for the most part. I usually just had the ones that I bought up there. So I was so excited. And so in the gallery post that will accompany this episode, again, on fireandwaterpodcast.com, I will post that photo, and you'll see me with our dog, Patrick, and laying in front of me on the table is this issue of Mad Magazine. So I was just so excited to have, like, a new photo again. It was so I pushed this episode to the front of the line. I was like, no, I want to do this one immediately. And it seems so timely, of course, because as we just talked about, Mad Magazine's going away. So I was like, oh, this is just perfect. You know, I just loved it. And it wasn't a magazine that I saw a lot at home on newsstands. But as I've mentioned in previous episodes, the newsstands up in the Poconos were much more extensive. They were much more plentiful. So I bought a lot of black and white magazines. I bought Savage Sword of Conan. I bought Warren. Uh-huh. I bought Cracked and Mad. So there was the physical evidence. So I was so, so excited to have this. So, yeah, this is the one we're going to be talking about, which is Mad 242. What do you think of the cover, which is, as I mentioned, the A-Team Alfred E. Newman Star Wars mashup?
Well, you know, this is going to sound weird to say about a cover of Mad Magazine, but it's kind of beautiful, really.
It's a beautiful painting. It's Richard Williams. It's a really nice painting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's obviously well done. It's painted very, you know, it's a photorealistic painting of Mr. T, of Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford, and Mark Hamill. Yeah. And, you know, it looks really good. It does. Yeah, it's an incredibly well done cover, actually.
The painting of the Mr. T face could absolutely have worked on like a Rocky III poster.
Oh,
there's,
for sure.
There's no parody there at all. The ones of the Star Wars cast are slightly exaggerated, but the Mr. T is straight on menacing. It's a beauty. You said it's a beautiful painting.
Yeah, I mean, and look, he's wearing his feathered earrings and all that, and that's, you know, he took some time doing that. You know, he didn't just slap this together. This is actually really well done.
Yeah, yeah, it's really, really nice. So I like it a lot. So,
You see the UPC code?
Yes, they even managed to stick a gag on the UPC code at the bottom. If you look, I mean, you'll see the actual bars, but if you look closely, it says cross section of Mr. T's mohawk haircut today and as a baby, and it talks about the two different barcodes, which is, I love that they made the extra effort to do that, to throw that gag in there. That's great.
You know, and I think that's what I liked so much about Mad, what I appreciated so much about it, was it is just jam-packed with gags.
Yep.
And it's sort of like a magazine version of Airplane, you know, because it's just like they're throwing everything they can at the wall, whether it sticks or not. And it's just gag, 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 gag. And it just does not let up for this entire, 52 pages, which is a good-sized magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just... it's great, and it really requires a reader to pay attention.
Oh, sure, and you're getting a lot of content for a dollar. Like this is a dense read. I mean, it sounds a little silly to say Mad Magazine is a dense read, but nevertheless, it kind of is, just of how much material, as you said, they're throwing at you, and only for a buck.
Right, cheap, as they say.
Yeah, cheap, as they say. Right. I mean, Mad Magazine has always been sort of code for kind of like lowbrow reading. I mean, there's the movie Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, where we meet Steve Martin on the train to Michael Caine, and he's got a bookmark in his Mad Magazine. You know, this is great. But, you know, considering the level of satire that we see nowadays from some things, Mad Magazine looks positively like Peabody Award-winning
it really
material
does.
Compared to the stuff nowadays. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, but, you know, but Mad just, you know, they just kind of go for it, and I think this was with Gaines, you know, the publisher William Gaines, that it they really embraced that. That's what they were aiming for. They weren't aiming high.
No.
You know, they wanted to be corny. They wanted to be cheesy. They wanted to push envelopes, which, you know, they do in this, you know, to varying degrees of success in this issue. And everyone is fair game. Everyone is a target. Politicians, movie stars, big hit movies, just normal people going about their everyday lives. I mean, everything is a target.
Yep, that's true. You mentioned movies. On the inside cover, there's an ad for the Mad Super Special, Mad Movies 2, and it talks about it. And it's a reprint of different features, of course, because, of course, Mad had so much material to call from. But at the bottom, it has these great little inset caricatures by Mort Drucker of Marlon Brando, Robert Redford, Sylvester Stallone, John Travolta, Paul Newman, and Christopher Reeve as Superman. So now I'm thinking I got to go get this so Chris and I can do an episode of Superman Movie Minute about whatever mad parodies they did there.
Yeah, I think what did they call it? Stupendous Man or something like that?
Something like that.
Yep. Yeah, it showed up a few times. And again, the UPC symbol on that
and Rich Little as the UPC symbol. Yeah,
Rich Little. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm of a certain age, so I remember Rich Little being on everything.
Oh, me too. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So again, we have the table of contents from the usual Gang of Idiots. Of course, there's the letters page. There's another ad for another Mad paperback, which is a Don Martin collection, and then we get to the first story, which is the parody, which is rehash of the Jetty, which is, you know, as Milhouse Van Houten would say, they don't care whose toes they step on. But the opening splash page is by Mort Drucker, and it's got, you know, the usual gang of the Star Wars characters, and they're each got their own little bit with their little drawing. And I mean, it's sort of funny in that you look at this, and I mean, first of all, I love that the Lando has got a bunch of the Ewoks surrounding it, but then there's also Fozzie Bear and the dwarves and Kermit the Frog and stuff like that. But I mean, like, so you got Mort Drucker, right? Everyone's familiar with the great Mort Drucker, where sure. it's this incredibly stylized but yet beautifully realized drawing. I mean, the line work is great, but at the same time, like, he's got Princess Leia standing there. And should I admit this? Like, it's still kind of hot. Even with the Mort Drucker face, she still looks really hot. I was like, I can imagine when I was 12, I'd say I would have been 12 when this came out. I'm sure this still registered with me, even though she's a Mort Drucker caricature.
Oh, yeah. No. And, you know, Mort Drucker, you know, is, you know, he's famous for his caricatures. But they're never that far off. They never pass into that uncanny valley. And yeah, I mean, that's definitely Carrie Fisher in her bikini, middle bikini, you know? So yeah, no, it totally works.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. So again, the opening, they just trip hammering through the scenes. And I actually love the scene. They get right to the scene with Jabba the Hutt. And as drawn by Mort Drucker, Jabba just looks like Jabba. It's not a parody. Like, you could just put that in a Star Wars comic from Marvel and no one would know the difference. It's so beautifully drawn.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no. It's really well done. And you have, you know, what do they call them? Ham Yo-Yo in the background, frozen in carbonite.
Yep.
You know, these are iconic, what would become iconic images. And they, you know, it's all there. And that is totally Jabba. I mean, if you go to the movie, if you haven't seen the movie yet for some reason, and you're reading Mad Magazine and you go, and that is what you're going to see. That is Jabba.
Yeah, I said it's, as you said, things are only sort of slightly exaggerated, and they kind of go through all the major beats. I mean, there's the stuff with Jabba the Hutt. There's the scene on Dagobah. There's a thing with the Admiral Ackbar. They go to Endor, of course, that whole scene, and then we get to the near the end where there's the big climactic fight between Luke and Vader, and boy, the use of lights and darks, by Mort Drucker on this sequence, where Luke and Vader are facing off in an Emperor's throne room, the final panel of, I don't know what exactly, page 7, I guess it is, where they've got the lightsabers and Darth is saying, come on, Luke, fight for your life. And, I mean, it is, again, it looks like something from real Star Wars. It doesn't look like a parody. It's so beautifully put together in front of that giant window.
Is. Yeah, they're backlit by that big circular window. Their sabers are crossed, and you know they're kind of in shadow, but there's these small highlights to give definition. I would not be surprised to see this panel like in the Marvel adaptations.
Yeah,
you know, like the early Marvel adaptations. It is just really nice. Really beautiful. It's really well done.
I can only assume that Mort Drucker inked himself. It doesn't mention a separate inker. And so, I mean, for as good as a penciler he is an outstanding inker.
Yeah.
I mean, his line work is sort of varied and rich and deep. I mean, you've got these tiny little lines on like when the planet, the scenes on Endor with these tiny little cross hatchings. But then you've got this shot of like the Emperor standing there with these sort of deep shadows in his robe. And then there's the panel where Luke's getting zapped by the electricity. And I mean, I love that it's the electricity is conveyed through white on this gray background. I mean, it's like the balance of lights and darks in this is just makes this thing so beautiful to look at. And then you get to the humor where you get to the final page where Darth gets his helmet pulled off. And it's like the goofiest wall-eyed face popping out of there. And he goes right back to the goofiness of it. I love
right.
it.
With a Band-Aid stuck on his
forehead. Yeah, on his forehead. Yeah. Yeah. I also love that Lando's co-pilot of the Millennium Falcon is Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that. How many, I think there's like 3 or 4 references to Disney in this thing, and that's kind of, you know, kind of prophetic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little did they know.
Yeah, yeah. It's really, and you know, it's funny, Mad Magazine was the kind of thing where the way they made fun of it, or pretty much any of these movies, you never felt like they were, for lack of a better term, kind of like shitting on it. Like they were taking, to use another scatological term, they were taking the piss out of it, but not like, I loved Star Wars, obviously, but I also loved the Mad Magazine parody of Star Wars, and I wasn't conflicted about those two things. I didn't come away going, oh, what are they making fun of Star Wars? No, I loved it. It was great. It was like, because you felt like it was done by people that actually love this thing, and that's how they always say, you really can only do good parody if you really love the thing you're parodying, because you understand it on a sort of a micro level.
Absolutely, and I think that is a really good point, because growing up, I never had a problem with, you know, Star Wars being made fun of any of the other things that they would make. You know, and I loved Star Wars. I grew up loving Star Wars. And, you know, this to me, you know, because this was obviously not the first parody that they ever did. And they were all done with good nature. And as you said, like, obvious love for the property.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because none of it is mean-spirited. None of it is cheap. It's all just kind of, you know, it's almost just like a nudge in the ribs.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I also love, just as we exit this, the final panel, which is the big party scene down on Endor. Way in the background, there's Spock sitting there with the rest of the Star Wars gang. So, and it's
right
funny.
Right behind the red light, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because in that scene, you're actually seeing Han and Leia get married, which, of course, does not happen in the movie. but there it is. I love it. It's really, really – so it's great. It's one of their really fun parodies. Mort Drucker, man, just
– oh, yeah.
Oh, God, so talented. So the next –
detailed. I mean, just to borrow a phrase from you, just to wax Drucker's car a little bit more.
Yeah.
The detail – I mean, not just the shading that we talked about, because he also does it in the second to last panel with Han and Leia.
Mm-hmm.
But the level of detail is really amazing for what's supposed to be kind of just a joke.
Yeah, it's one feature among, you know, 15 other features, mm-hmm. and yet, you know, it's like I can only imagine what the originals, like his original art, must look like. It must be just sumptuous to take in.
Oh, God, you know, and I assume that part of that is knowing that it was going to be printed in black and white with, you know, the gray tones,
mm-hmm.
because it all just, you know, for all that detail, none of it gets lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just something that you can really. I know I used, when I was a kid reading Mad Magazine, I would pour over every panel, you know, just because there were some jokes going on, and the art is just great.
Yeah, it's right. It's a really, really sharp and beautiful, beautiful feature. So, and they must have loved it when a big movie could come out. They could really sink their teeth into it, you know, something that everybody knew was popular. So, okay, so now we're moving on to these other features, and these are a lot shorter, and we're not really necessarily going to stop the comment on them unless, Max, you have something particular you want to say about one of them. We have warning labels that we desperately need, which is all about products. It's drawn by Bob Clark, who had kind of like a painterly style. They talk about romance novels and then booze and alarm clocks and things like that. It's just kind of like things from your life and things like that. I mean, it's sort of funny that a lot of these gags are really kind of not so much aimed at little kids, because there are a lot of products that little kids don't use, you know, like an alarm clock or old, you know, whiskey or frozen broccoli. It's kind of aimed really more at adults who actually have to buy these things as opposed to kids who don't worry about buying products.
Right. And kids who don't worry that, you know, the Hershey's chocolate is going to have however many calories in it. You know, this is this is definitely aimed at adults.
Right. So the next feature is you've got You're Never Really 100% Sure Is If, and it's drawn by Paul Coker. He's one of my favorite mad artists.
Yeah.
I love his style. It's got this wonderfully loose, you know, almost scratchy type thing, and yet it's so full of life. And they talk about, you know, the you're never really sure what exactly goes on a movie theater's floor, if abstract art is a big – I love this joke. You're never 100% sure if abstract art is a big intellectual put-on or if you're just stupid and missing the point, which, I've been there, man. I feel that way about David Lynch movies. I'm like, is this just a bunch of bullshit or am I just stupid? I don't know. So Mad Magazine's really hit me where I live here with this feature.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, and I have to agree with the art. And it kind of reminds me of the style of the Saturday morning things that they would show about, like, the Constitution.
Oh, Schoolhouse Rock.
Schoolhouse Rock, yes. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, the art reminds me a lot of Schoolhouse Rock in that kind of simple way. But it's also really expressive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lady laughing. There's another person who just has this look of frustration on their face, and you know, it's really like you said, it's simple, but it's not. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. No, really, it's It's got a lot of life to it, considering he's just getting things across with just one little line of his like rapidograph pen or whatever he's doing. They're very, very expressive figures. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big fan of Paul Coker. I think he's really one of my favorite. And again, the gray tones are just wonderful. Yeah. I mean, they're really, really sharp. So next up is Mads, Video Game Arcade Owner of the Year, which is drawn by Angelo Torres and written by Frank Jacobs. And again, like this is I always kind of wonder about that. And it's got the host is Clint Eastwood, which is like a weird like what? But I always wonder about this stuff where it's like, you know, Mad Magazine at this point was done by, as they say, the usual gang of idiots. But these guys were all in like their 40s, maybe 50s. And I wonder, like, how did they access like new culture like this, video games? Did they have somebody young on staff? Did they consult their kids maybe? I mean, they had to kind of keep up with trends because they were appealing to young kids. But I mean, I'm sure that, you know, Frank Jacobs was probably an older guy and he didn't really play video games at this age.
Right. Yeah. No, and in the background, there's a machine for a mousetrap. You know, and who the hell knows what mousetrap is unless you're going to an arcade?
Right.
And yeah, but it's interesting, you know, like you mentioned, there's I think part of what it is the direction that this is taking isn't so much about video games as much as people taking advantage of an audience.
Right.
You know, because the whole thing is about Eastwood, for some reason, interviewing this guy.
Clint Eastwood,
yeah. He's interviewing the owner of the arcade, and the arcade guy is basically going through the steps of how he's taking money from these teenagers and who are filling his arcade.
Yeah. It's like, okay, all right. And they said there's references to Frogger, and then there's parody games like Bedbug and things like that. I mean, so yeah, it's like
Adenoids.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time in arcade, so I could relate to this. So it's a weird little feature, but it's fun. And now we have a one-pager from Don Martin about One Fine Medieval Morning at Home, which I feel like, and I have no prior knowledge of this, but I feel like if Dr. Ange read Mad Magazine, his favorite feature must have been Don Martin, because it's all dad jokes.
Oh, it's totally.
It's all that kind of stuff. I feel like Dr. Ange is – if he doesn't know Mad Magazine, I think we need to get him some Don Martin paperbacks, because I feel like he would appreciate it, because it's all these kinds of silly jokes and things like that. Yeah. So,
but Don Martin is one of those artists. His artwork to me is Mad Magazine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he is just such an iconic style.
It doesn't look like anything else.
No.
No one's ever drawn a human being that like Don Martin.
No. I mean, toes just like kind of bend back at a 90-degree angle. And,
Know,
and there's
Schlorp, kind of,
Yeah. Everyone's kind of lumpy and, you know, everyone kind of looks the same, but not really. And it's a really distinct style. But it is, to me, that is quintessential Mad Magazine.
Yeah, I always kind of wonder how he got to this style, like what he drew like when he was younger, and did he just morph into this, and then he finally got to this peculiar look, like Fred Hembeck.
Yeah.
You know, like once he got to that, he's just like, oh yeah, that's my style, and then he just did that for the rest of his life. You know, it's sort of interesting.
That's a question. I'm curious. I would be curious now to see what what kind of stuff
early Don Martin looked
yeah,
like.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Next up is, and this one is scarily prescient, a short history showing how different publications slant the news. And this is drawn by George Woodbridge, written by Paul Lakin. And, I mean, they're mostly taking kind of light gags. I mean, there's a joke from about Pravda and the Irish Free Press.
That
I mean, yet. Yeah, I mean, the Irish Free Press, God Save Senator Kennedy as Catholic Girl Drowns.
Oh, wow.
Wow. I mean, Jiminy Christmas.
Wow.
I
mean, yeah. Yeah. 35 years later, that one still stings. Wow.
You've got the Chrysler Corporation. Chrysler Corp makes U.S. government a partner in its operation. And there's a smiling picture of Ronald Reagan. There's the National Enquirer, the Congressional Recorder, FBI agents dressed as Arab sheiks, corrupt U.S. congressmen. I mean, this is pretty much, you could change a couple of names, and this is pretty much 2019.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Chrysler one, I actually had to look up because I was not, instantly familiar with what they were talking about. And it's basically a buyout.
Yeah.
It's basically the idea of Chrysler being too big to fail. And it's what you're saying, you know, this is change a few names and yeah, you know, hello 2019.
Yeah, no, it's nothing changes. It's just, like unreal. So, I feel like that was how Mad sort of worked, operated, was that, you know, you have like the Return of the Jedi parody, which is gentle and goofy and silly. And then you go in for the kill a couple of pages later, and it's only 2 pages. I mean, it's short, it's very brief, but I mean, good Lord, they're still zinging on Ted Kennedy after Chappaquiddick a good 12 years after it happened or whatever. I mean, God.
But you know, but that's kind of the genius of Mad, at least with these smaller features, is that they're talking about very specific instances or things that were in the news or, you know, things like that. But big picture, you know, this is about corporate corruption and you know, dirty politics and, you know, and those things, you know, unfortunately, are kind of, you know, forever. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's what makes it work so well, is that they're it's using a specific thing to deliver a broad joke.
Yep. Next up, you've got Dave Berg's The Lighter Side Of, and it's clothes, records, dentists, sex, food, soap operas, yada, yada, yada. I will say, I never once laughed at Dave Berg. I'm sorry. I know the man's a legendary figure, but I always felt like these jokes you just saw coming from so far away that they just felt like, you know, that Mad was kind of like, oh, it's a, like, I feel like Dave Berg must have been incredibly dependable. Yeah, like, you know, he guaranteed that he could deliver 4 pages per month without fail, and that's why he got this. But I never once laughed at a Dave Berg cartoon.
Dave Berg, I mean, and not to crap on the guy, because, you know, he has some good gags, and I, for some reason, I like that character of his, that always the guy with the waistcoat and the pipe, for some reason makes me
like the sub genius looking dude.
Yeah, for some reason he always makes me laugh. But yeah, this feature at least is like going to the Catskills.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. That's it. Yeah. I was kind of like, all right. Next, we have a one-page Spy versus Spy, again, which is always very fun. I mean, again, the same joke over and over and over, and just to find a way that they could find a new a new way to tell the same joke over and over again. And then I always just appreciate it just because it was so brief. You know, I mean, and it, of course, it's the same thing as Roadrunner and Coyote. It's the same joke over and over again, the same setup over and over. But you just kind of enjoy it and you move on to the next thing because it's just, it takes 5 seconds to read as it zips by.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, the Roadrunner and Coyote is a good example just because there's also no dialogue.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's just, This is another thing that seems very simple because basically it's itchy and scratchy. You know, it's two guys trying to kill each other. But the imagination it must have taken to be able to tell this same joke over and over again is pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I remember on the TV show they actually animated them. They actually had animated spy versus spy things.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's, again, they're sort of durable considering there's not a whole lot there, really. Yeah. Next
I've got
up
a whole Spy versus Spy collection on my shelf.
There you go. We've got Mad's all-inclusive do-it-yourself Peanuts comic strip. And this is just kicking this strip in the face because the whole gist is that there's a peanut strip and with blank balloons, and you fill in your own – you can fill in your own copy – based on what the choices they give you, and it's all just brutal. I mean, it's just, hey, Charlie Brown, and then the selections are, you're a born loser. Your head could double as a softball. You give living a bad name. You're the joke of the neighborhood. I mean, there's no jokes there. It's just Lucy just abusing Charlie Brown, which is just kind of like it's Mad, you know, crapping on an American institution by this point.
Yeah, and pretty harshly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It makes me wonder how many kids would have really gone through this, because it also seems like a lot of work.
It is, right. You got to sit there and, like, do the matching and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Next up is poetic tributes to people who wouldn't ordinarily get them. And the artist is Harry North, who has these little vignettes. And there's like a little poem to a mugger, to a garbage man, to a plumber, to a parking attendant. And I never thought to a mover, loan shark, postal clerk, yada, yada, yada. I don't think that the jokes are all that great. I mean, the poems are incredibly complex to write these things. But what I love is the little inset artwork by Harry North. Incredibly detailed for how these are basic thumbnails in terms of how small they are. And there's one to a forgotten government official. There's like seven heads in that tiny little space. Yeah. And for those of you who have had to ever draw on anything, that's really hard to draw that many features in that tiny little space and make it clear visually that you can make out what you're looking at.
Yeah. No, and it's – and again, there is an amazing amount of detail in all of these drawings, actually. You know, the one that – what is like an ode to a mugger, you know, it's – there's some perspective. There's shadowing. There's the body language of the guy face down and ass up on the street.
Yeah.
You know, there's stuff in the garbage can behind him.
Yep.
You know, he didn't have to do all that work.
Nope. Yeah, it's really, again, the amount of effort these guys put into this stuff. Next up is another Don Martin strip, One Afternoon on a Remote Jungle Island, which, again, is another dad joke. But, I mean, that's what Don Martin is, and that's what you're getting. And then we have An Advertiser Would Have Us Believe, and drawn by the great Jack Davis. I mean, again, these jokes are funny. I like them. There's an Orson Welles joke in here, which I appreciated, and it's always fun to take on advertisers, because I mean, who doesn't hate advertising? But really, the thing that stirs this is that it's Jack Davis. I mean, Jack Davis, one of the great comic artists of all time, and the fact that he could just continually crank out this material with these wonderful gray tones and these kind of weirdly sexualized yet, you know, hot women, which is weird because it's like, you know, there's a great joke about an advertiser joking about a political candidate. You know, the preservation of the American way depends on reelecting some idiot to Congress who hasn't done anything for us in 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, we can just stat that, right, and put it in the new issue because it's the same. It's all the same thing. I mean, I never get tired of looking at Jack Davis.
Yeah. Oh, no. And let me ask you something, Rob. Do you think Mad Magazine would have been as successful without the stable of artists that they were lucky enough to have?
Oh, no, definitely not. They had some of the greatest humor artists to ever work in the field. And I think that was part of it. I mean, Cracked was lucky enough to have John Severin, who was one of the great artists, but I don't think, you know, and I loved Cracked. I read Cracked too, but Cracked just, I don't think ever quite had the stable that Mad had. I mean, Don Martin, Sergio Aragonés, we haven't even mentioned Sergio.
Yeah. And he's been all over this magazine.
Yeah, he's been all over the magazine, literally all over in the margins. Jack Davis, I mean, the cover we took by Richard Williams, Norman Mingo. I mean, these were some of the greatest guys ever to do it. And the fact that they could, I mean, I think a lot of them did advertising work. Certainly Jack Davis made a lot of money doing advertising, but the fact that Mad managed to keep them employed for decades on end says something about the relationships that Gaines had with these guys. Cause this stuff is just so beautiful to look at.
It really is. And I agree. I don't, you know, we're talking about how the gags are just okay, or they're dad jokes, or, you know, they're like, I keep going back to the word corny, but a lot of it is very corny. But what sells it is that artwork.
Yeah, it really is. It's beautiful stuff. And ironically, we're going to get to the next thing featuring the one of the few artists from Mad that I don't like. Yeah. And this is lose weight mainly because you lose your appetite with the Mad Gross Out Diet. And it's written and drawn by Paul Peter Porges. And I've never liked this guy's stuff. No insult intended to the man. I'm sure he's a very nice guy. But his stuff is so hideous to look at. I know in this specific instance it's meant to. It's meant to be gross jokes. But to me, his people are so grotesque looking that I just find it really unpleasant. And I've never really liked any of his stuff that I've seen.
No, I agree. It's there's one, Dine with Someone with Halitosis or Dandruff or Acne. And it is gross enough that it takes away whatever could have been funny about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just, it's unappealing. You know, it's just not, it doesn't work. It's a rare miss from a mad artist.
The other parody is the Asinine Team, the A-Team, written by Stan Hart and drawn again by Mort Drucker. And again, it's like the Jedi thing. This thing is just so beautiful to look at. The grays that are used here, there's this really nice sequence. It's on page 43 where the top row of panels is them driving in their van. Everybody remembers the van. Mm-hmm. And in the one panel, you've got a gray background and the van is in white, so it pops. And then in the next panel, you've got we're much closer up and it's all in all white panel, and the inside through the windshield is gray, and you've got all the caricatures in gray, and they're just, it's the use again of lights and darks is so beautiful. And I don't know whether this was Mort Drucker or was there a separate team that did these sort of wash colors. I have no idea, but whoever did the gray tones really knew what they were doing, because they're just, it's such beautiful stuff. And the way it manages to separate and give depth from a foreground, background, middle ground is remarkable.
Yeah, and it's nothing. It's a crowd, especially the second panel where you're seeing them more close up out, and, you know, through the windshield of the van. It's a crowded panel. A lot is going on in there, and then, like you said, you have the grays on for the inside, but nothing is lost. Mr. T is obviously still Mr. T. He's very much on model. Hannibal is there, you know, and I almost missed him the first time. I think that's Face. I don't remember the exact
detail. Yeah, Face.
But there's
Face.
A guy right behind Hannibal who's just kind of in the background, but you know, he's there.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, there's a gag going on all around them.
Yeah, but they're going through a construction site. Yeah.
Yeah, you just see a foot up in the air and you see a traffic cone. And, you know, there's so much going on here, but it's so well done and so smooth that what could be an overwhelming, busy panel is just really it just works so well.
Yeah, it's not. And, of course, but who can't make fun of the A-Team? I mean, that's a show ripe for being made fun of, is that kind of nonsense. So, yeah, it's good.
I'm curious if he was working on this at the same time as The Return of the Jedi, because this is a lot of work.
It is. It is. I don't know how he managed it. I mean, the final – on the final page, the one scene where it's just all action, where the A-Team is shooting, and there's what? I think there's probably, what, a dozen characters in that panel?
Yeah.
You got the A-Team, and they're shooting guys. I mean, you're like, God, it's I know we're kind of going over the same material, but it's just, looking back at this stuff, it's like, I don't think I really appreciated this when I was 13, you know? I mean, just kind of read it. I'm like, oh, this is funny. And I moved on to the next page. It's like, they probably took Mort Drucker a day to do. You know, all that detail, it's crazy.
Yeah, all those facial expressions. There's a guy doubled over from getting shot. And, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's really, really good stuff.
There is some unfortunate, I feel like I have to mention it, there is some unfortunate blackface.
There is,
on the previous panel. Just to kind of soften that a little bit, at least Mr. T is saying, I don't think you're going to get away with that.
Yes. Yeah.
So at least if they're doing something so awkward, at least they're acknowledging that it is awkward.
They're commenting on it at least. Yes. They're not. The joke is not that he's in blackface. The joke that he's in blackface and that's ridiculous.
Right. And he's been in disguise every panel. What he's been wearing has been different in every panel because right. You know, he's supposed to be a master of disguise. And, you know, again, and I'm not making excuses at all, but, you know, this is Mad Magazine pushing boundaries.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Yeah. It's a really a just beautifully drawn by Moore Drucker. And then we have one more Don Martin, One Fine Evening During Prime Time, which is this sort of manic thing about people watching television. And then in the inside cover, we get the Mad Fold-In. By Al Jaffe, the late great Al Jaffe, who was, I think, alive up until just a couple of years ago. And again, this is another one of these things that I'm like, I don't know how they did this month in, month out. How they managed to find a comment to make and then put it in this format. I mean, that just seems like so much extra work.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, good Lord.
Did you print it out?
No, I didn't. I did not fold it because what is changing America's drinking habits? Did you fold it in?
It is dark.
Okay, what's the gag? What is changing America's drinking habits? America's drinking habits are constantly changing. What we drink, where we drink, and how we drink depends on many varied factors. To find out what has caused the latest big change in our drinking habits, fold in this page as shown on the right. So what's the answer, Max?
So the image that we have is of very dapper couples going into something called the Oasis Lounge. It looks very swank. It's a beautiful image. Very pretty, and when you fold the page over, the answer is contaminated water, and the Oasis turns into a tap with water in the shape of a skull.
Whoa. Oh man! Enjoy, kids. Thanks for. And then we're going to wrap up the magazine on the back cover with one more silly Don Martin cartoon about Frankenstein. So it's just like we're just throwing everything at you. Yeah, it's overall, I think it's like a really solid issue of Mad Magazine, and it's exactly what you want. It gives you all the kind of stuff that you expect for what you expect out of Mad Magazine, and it was really fun. And I'm sorry that I didn't spend more time reading Mad. I think, as like I said, it wasn't available all that much to me in newsstands around. But I was glad that I picked it up when I had it, and I'm really grateful for that photo, and because it reminded me to go back and reread this. And this was really a lot of fun. And on top of the contemporary humor and the stuff that I still laughed at, it was just so beautiful to look at all this art again.
It really was, and I'm sad. There's a couple. I mean, I'm sad to see Mad go. Part of that is just nostalgia, but part of it is this sense of, you know, we need, every society needs the kid who points at the emperor and says he has no clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And Mad Magazine was just phenomenal at doing that, month after month after month, while at the same time working on so many levels that kids got it, adults got it, and they somehow still never took themselves too seriously. Mm-hmm. And that's a hell of a trick.
Yeah, it's true. And they said they, I mean, again, the usual gang of idiots, you know, I mean, yeah. They're calling themselves that. So yeah, they were just this ongoing, you know, this, the always pointing, you know, the jester, always the jester. Mm-hmm. Going on. And it was always great that it was available. And, you know, The Simpsons, obviously, which became preeminent form of satire on television, you know, very much owned up to how much it loved Mad Magazine. You know, I mean, one of my favorite gags, and not to get too far off the topic as we wrap up here, but one of my favorite gags that The Simpsons ever did was the one where The Simpsons go to New York and Bart becomes a – you seen that episode?
It sounds kind of familiar.
Okay. They go to New York and that episode actually was pulled out of syndication for many years because there was a Twin Towers joke.
Oh.
And of course, you know, post 9/11, that was deemed a pretty offensive, you know, mm-hmm. in poor taste.
Sure.
So the episode was pulled out of syndication for many years. But one of the running gags is that Bart is obsessed to go to the Mad offices. Which is, again, even out of time. Like, what little kid in, you know, in 1997 or whatever they did it was obsessed with Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, he wants to go to the Mad offices. And he finally gets in, and he can only creep in through the door. He opens the door just enough to look in, and then he's basically sneaking in. And on the inside, you see this panoply of animated people, some in like a Don Martin style, some in a Spider-Man style. And they're all just – it's like chaos.
Yeah.
And they make the Mad Offices look like – a crazy carnival. And it's what's sort of funny is there's no real joke. It's really more of a tribute. Mm-hmm. It's just, oh, hey, the Mad Offices are exactly the kind of place that an 11-year-old want them to be.
Yeah.
It's madness. It's craziness. It's just weird people doing weird and funny things. And I love that The Simpsons, the writers, took kind of that moment to say, you know what, we could put a joke here, but we're not going to. It's just going to be a nice tribute. And I love that. To me, it's one of the more warm-hearted jokes The Simpsons ever did. It's like they love Mad, and that's how they're putting it across. I think it's a great bit.
It is, and you know, you describing that gives me chills because that is how I always picture the Mad Offices.
Yes, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Like that.
Yeah, just kind of like a bunch of crazy guys having a good time, and they're wearing fake masks and probably, you know, pulling pranks on each other. And like, I mean, again, can you imagine what it would look like to work in the Mad Offices and like have the Mort Drucker originals come in? Like, what a beauty that had to look like.
My gosh.
I mean, that just had to be so beautiful to look at him and be like, wow, this is gorgeous. You know what I mean? Just that kind of thing. Just the appreciation of the original artwork has got to be just fantastic. So, man, we have spent almost an hour talking about an issue of Mad Magazine. I can't think of a better tribute. Max, thank you so much for doing this with me. The timing of it was so perfect is that I got this photo that I didn't remember existed, and it reminded me of an old Mad that I had on the mountains, and it was great. And, of course, Mad is in the news lately. So it was just a perfect storm. And so thank you so much for coming back on to Mountain Comics. This was a blast.
Oh, thank you, Rob. This is, I mean, I always enjoy being on your shows, and talking about Mad Magazine is just, you know, icing on the cake.
Yeah, it's great, great stuff. So where can people find you on our network?
They can find me right here on the Fire and Water Podcast Network at Plasticast and at the Mirror Factory, which will both be returning soon.
Oh, I'm very excited about that. That's very good. I'm recording this episode a little bit ahead of time. So I'm hoping between now when you're saying this and when the episode drops, the shows will have come back by then. So I hope that it's already happened, but we'll see. We're holding out hope.
That's very possible. That's very possible.
Oh, I'm very excited. Very excited about that. So, well, that's going to do it. Everybody, of course, you can find back episodes of Mountain Comics on the website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. You just can play. It's part of the FW Presents feed. So you just can put in the word Mountain or Mountain Comics in the search bar, and you'll pull up all the episodes from the previous two seasons that I've been doing the show. The Mountain Comics has its own Twitter feed, because of course it does. You just go to Mountain Comics. I'm trying to balance out all the Nazis on there. You go to Twitter, and you just go to Mountain Comics, FW Mountain Comics, and you'll find it. And I love talking about comics there. I mean, I don't just talk about the books that I'm covering. I talk about comics in general, because I just love all this stuff. So again, thanks everybody for listening. I really do appreciate it. And then until the next episode, Max and I are going to sit back and have some yoo-hoos and look out over the sunset as it creeps down over Lake Wall and Paul Pack. So that's going to do it. We will see you guys later. Bye.
It's a mistake.